Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of January, and I'm recording at late-ish 10:45 here. And that's Greenwich Mean Time in London, of course. Okay, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick look at the week. And it was a nervous week. Somewhat exciting, but very choppy. Overall, we had the sell-off in the first couple of days, and then we had a sharp rally on Wednesday and Thursday, and a little more selling pressure in here today, although not so much in the Asia-Pacific region. The Asia-Pacific region was somewhat firmer. A little softening in China, Taiwan. That was a tiny bit in Singapore. That was most of it. Otherwise, we had gains. But the Asian markets today, European markets today, they have sold off quite sharply. In some cases, a Eurostoxx 50 index down 2.94%. Now, there has been the disturbing terrorist attacks in France, of course, and fears that can spread more widely, and that's a real risk. So that's, I think, added a little pressure in here. There's the uncertainty over the Russian situation. There's the greater uncertainty over the ECB. That's the European Central Bank, of course, and we know what Mario Draghi wants, more freedom to bring in the quantitative easing. He also wants some restructuring of the economic policies within individual countries, but of course that's not something that he is able to enforce at the ECB. And there are concerns that his freedom in freedom in the field of monetary policy is going to be pared back somewhat. We'll know before the end of the month. So there's a lot to be concerned about overall. And then I think investors are continuing to freak out about the lower oil price and a sharp drop like that. The word collapse is used. There are obviously benefits to lower oil prices in terms of consumer spending and countries that import oil are huge beneficiaries of this. The tables all say the Philippines is at the top of the list, but you know, India is another very big beneficiary of this. Well, most countries are beneficiaries, obviously not the oil producers overall. But when we talk about countries benefiting from it, and they obviously are, that will help global GDP growth. But the benefits are spread more widely, so they don't get the same sort of headlines. Consumers have more money in their pockets. Corporations find their costs going down in terms of all their manufacturing activities. But it's some of the more marginal oil producers that are really in a more dangerous situation. And Venezuela, very likely to be in a default situation before too long. Russia, not far behind, and there's a big concern that I don't want to exaggerate, that might Putin do something very dangerous and risky to try to get the oil price somewhat higher. These are all the things that are running through people's minds, and a lot of uncertainties actually being created here. Well, let's look at that situation in terms of oil and what is actually going on here. And what we actually see is largely four Sunni Arab countries: Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and Qatar. They are most unified here and behind this push to knock down the oil price. They're richer than the Shia oil states, and they are trying, and of course, there that Sunni-Shia conflict has been going on since practically time immemorial. And so there's a little bit of a religious war here. There's a war against the U.S. shale producers taking place. They'd like to knock them out. They would also like to knock back the Russian production overall. There's resentment of Russia by the Sunnis because Russia has that naval base in Syria. And I think that's the Tartus base there in the Mediterranean. And so the Russians are supporters of Bashar al-Assad. This goes on and on and on. And it's nasty. It's going for the jugular here in terms of this energy price battle. There are precedents for this. We saw, investors who are closer to my age will remember some of the earlier incidents in history when the Saudi-led move has knocked oil prices well down. Certainly, they did this in a big way in 1986. And that left oil, I think, just above $10 a barrel. And then the Saudi ministers sought to undermine prices temporarily in the 19 in temporarily in the 1990s. So again, repeat that there's precedent for this action overall. The difference this time, though, is they are up against technologies and technologies which made the horizontal drilling and the shale fracking techniques available. There are the technologies that are leading to the strong growth in solar power. Then the more expensive and less efficient wind, but there are a lot of alternative energy sources that are gradually improving and being utilized more. There is the natural gas and so on. So it's a much it's going to be much more difficult here for Saudi Arabia and its Sunni partners in this move to regain control over OPEC. I don't think they will. Now, I've been on record before in saying that. But when I said they were going for the jugular here, they're talking about, and maybe there's a little bit of bluster and bluff in all this. But that they will let this go down as far as market forces carry it. And they almost have to because the first thing the Venezuelans and the Russians do is pump out more of the stuff. Any other producer in the business is trying to do exactly the same. Because your revenue is going down, so you try to produce more oil to partly offset the loss of income that you actually have. So that's the situation on oil. But and then you have investors globally who look at this and say, "Oh my God, this is really deflationary," and they see pockets of strong deflation. I mean, we know all about the Japanese history in terms of what happened there after 1990. And then we've got the very real situation of deflationary pressures in the European Union and uncertainty over the extent to which Mario Draghi will be able to address that. So there's a lot to worry about here. But I feel that investors are overlooking the positive deflationary, disinflationary impact of the accelerating rate of technological development. And technology makes businesses more efficient. And that's what we're actually seeing. And that helps to lower prices overall. So does globalization, incidentally. And that's something that I've mentioned on many, many occasions over the years. So what are we left with at the end of the day? Well, global GDP growth is not as strong as we would actually like to see, but the lower oil price will provide a medium to longer term boost to GDP growth. The positive aspect of the technological influence on keeping inflationary pressures down is a net bull factor, quite a significant net bull factor overall. And that's good for stock markets for sure. So, yes, we'll have this choppy, nervous period here for a while, but I'm not going to be selling any of my equity positions anytime soon. And I think the overall tactic that I have talked about, and not only this week, but on many other occasions, is that where one has the good fortune to see a position that benefits from a bit of investor euphoria, and if prices accelerate higher, well away from rising. Moving averages, rising 200-day moving averages, that it's not a bad idea to gradually lighten in those positions, because you know that those exceptional moves are unsustainable beyond the short to medium term, and then they're followed by lengthy reactions and consolidations, if not worse. What we don't want to be doing is selling when markets have gone into a temporary panic and valuations are improving. And if you have a portfolio of sensibly diversified funds and autonomies, and you can do a lot worse than have a portfolio entirely based on autonomies. Which, particularly if they have some decent dividends, and many of them do, you're paid for your patience in holding on, and also the sharper setbacks provide additional buying opportunities. So that's an environment that I think we have. And I have mentioned before, and wrote about this a little bit yesterday, that as far as I'm concerned, we are on track, very much on track, for the secular bull market that I've been talking about. That is, of course, the key factors, the most important ones of all. By overwhelmingly, the most important one is the accelerated rate of technological innovation, as you've heard me say so on so many occasions. And the second one, aided and abetted by technology, is cheaper energy prices. And I think that while they won't stay at below $50 indefinitely in terms of the price of crude oil, it could well go a bit lower in the weeks ahead. And then I think that it will be very, very difficult for producers to get prices back up into the or anywhere near the $100 range. And if we do see anything like that because of political fears or production bottlenecks, that won't last very long, because all sorts of additional production, not least shale, will be coming on stream as and when, or if that actually happens. So, technological innovation and the lower energy prices, those are the most crucial factors for the secular bull market. Which I think, to give a conservative view on this, we should not say is really underway properly until we have gone past the normalization of interest rates. And it's going to take a few years, 2, 3, 4, depending on which countries that we're talking about. But it's an environment that is still, I think, more bullish than bearish here overall. Okay, what about these long-dated government bonds? First, my hat's off to the people who hold these bonds because they've been right and they have hung in there and driven yields lower yet again. But here we are, the U.S. 10-year closed at 1.94% today. Now that's not far off the October low at 1.86, and the overall bias is still clearly downwards, so it can go lower. And then there's some people saying, well, that actually looks very attractive because you have the German 10-year Bunds yielding less than half a percentage point, which really is incredible. Could I be well, I'm not in those bonds, but could I feel comfortable and sanguine holding extra low yielding bonds? And the short answer is, of course, no, I couldn't, because to feel that those levels are going to provide additional gains and remain safe is to assume that the world's never going to see a decent growth rate in well, or that we're not going to see a decent growth rate for the rest of this decade, and perhaps beyond. And I don't believe that for a minute. So then the other alternative is to get some of the higher yielding, more risky bonds, but that's more speculative. I'd much rather just have a good portfolio of decent yielding, successful autonomies and lighten in those positions when they become overextended relative to their moving averages and add to them during the frightening setbacks. Okay, what about these currencies here overall? Now, I think we see the dollar index, which has been very strong, got up over 92, and it's down a little bit here today. This is first in perspective. We had about a 40-year bear market for the US dollar, so this is the first really convincing leg that that is well and truly over, and that if anything, we're in a dollar bull market overall. But the gain has been awfully sharp and is unsustainable at this rate, and I think also it's going to cause some problems. And I'll be very surprised if exporters are not expressing some concern that the Fed is likely to pay attention to here overall. I also feel that this will lower corporate profits a little bit for some of those exporters. And I think that coupled with the softness that we are seeing now in the shale sector, and that will go on for at least the medium term, that U.S. GDP growth will be a little softer. The bond markets are reflecting that, and that could well prevent the dollar from going much higher here in the short term. I think there's been a little bit too much so-called flight to quality for the U.S. dollar. And watch CNBC or any of the other financial channels and Bloomberg, and everybody who comes on is a dollar bull. That suggests a crowded position here to me. And what I like looking around, the Indian rupee's been strengthening against the dollar in the last few days. It had weakened a bit earlier on, but not all that much. And the Chinese renminbi also, that's steady-ish in here right now overall. It's just things like the Russian ruble and other oil-producing, largely oil-producing economies that are seeing their currencies absolutely, often absolutely hammered in here right now. So I would be careful about being overly long in the U.S. dollar. It's still in form, but it's an awfully big medium-term move that we have seen to the upside, and these inevitably pull back and experience some lengthy consolidations. And thinking also in terms of commodity markets here, and certainly I've been surprised to see how far back down commodities have actually come over the last year or so. And again, I think technology is a very big factor in all that. And these lower commodity prices that we're actually seeing, they're not so great for the commodity producers, obviously, but they are of benefit to the countries that need to import everything from foods to metals. And I think that there's as much positive disinflationary, deflationary pressure from these moves. There's more, I think actually there's more positive disinflationary and deflationary evidence from these markets than negatives for the global economy, for the global economy. Okay, what else to mention here? Well, I think that's pretty well covered the main bases overall. If I had to have any two stock markets for the next 5 years, India and China. And on that note, I wish you a very, very successful and relaxed weekend. And I really look forward to seeing a number of you on Monday for the Markets Now seminar. Meanwhile, all the very best. Have a great weekend.